The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily radio show. Lots to get to on today's program. We'll be talking in the second segment, well, just elaborating some on something I mentioned on Monday's program. All of these instances in ancient Israel where you had self-appointed leaders, kings, fake rulers, as I said, there's quite a few examples of this in Scripture, and we'll get into that in a little more detail coming up in the second segment. Well, speaking of fake leaders, in just one week, 7 days, the fake president, Joe Biden, has signed more than 40 executive orders. That's more than the first nine U.S. presidents combined. That's more than they signed during their, 52 years, I believe it was. 52 years of leadership. The first nine presidents of the United States of America, and Joe Biden has outdone them in 7 days. 7 days. In 1 week, he signed as many executive orders as Abraham Lincoln did during his entire presidency. He is on a blistering pace, even far and away more than FDR, Franklin Delano Roosevelt. And of course, he was famous or infamous, depending upon how you look at it, for his executive actions. He signed something like 3,700. Joe Biden, 40 in 1 week. One of our alumni at Edstone, he said, if you look at Wikipedia, I didn't have time to look at this morning, but they've got a table for presidents that have taken executive actions. They rank them even. And you've got Donald Trump. He's like a third of the way down the list. And Joe Biden, he's pretty much leading the way. And what did he say in October as I played for you yesterday? He said that, we can't, this is a democracy. We need consensus. You can't rule by executive order unless you're a dictator. That's what he said in October. That's what he said just a few weeks before the November election. And if you remember, also in October, he made this statement. This is clip 9.
We have put together, I think, the most extensive and inclusive voter fraud organization in the history of American politics.
So what he was saying, it's not like they were trying to be secretive about their intentions back before the election. He was hiding out in the basement. You hardly ever saw him. And when he did come out for interviews such as that, there were two guys, by the way, interviewing him there. And neither one of them spoke up when he said voter fraud organization. When he had a long pause and looked down at, perhaps looked at his notes even, and talked about this most extensive and inclusive voter fraud organization in the history of the United States, in the history of American politics. So he gets in, he completes the steal, and then look at the actions and how revealing those actions are, as I said yesterday. This is from the American Thinker. It says, Biden's executive orders in his first week in office have a few common themes. Subordinating the economy to climate change madness, using the strong arm of government to impose racial equity, the opposite of equality, erasing our borders, giving China complete access to America, and elevating a tiny group of body dysmorphic people known as transgender to a position of power in America. It says in each case, the consequences will damage members of the Biden coalition as well as most Americans. So he's catering to, as others have written, the radical fringe of his base and his popularity, what little there was, is plummeting. And all of these jobs that have been eliminated, he halted the work on the Keystone pipeline. Just with the stroke of a pen, tens of thousands of jobs eliminated. Between that and the work that stopped at the southern border, border security, that's over and done with as well. This is his climate change czar, John Kerry, another holdover from the Obama administration. We talked about Susan Rice yesterday, and here's John Kerry giving advice to those who've lost their jobs on the Keystone Pipeline. Or perhaps with other infrastructure kinds of jobs. This was John Kerry's advice yesterday, clip four.
Coal plants have been closing over the last 20 years. So what President Biden wants to do is make sure those folks have better choices, that they have alternatives, that they can be the people who go to work to make the solar panels.
Yeah, so if you lose your job at the Keystone Pipeline, then perhaps you can start making solar panels. That's the future of America. We've got to try to get into new energy, solar panels and the like. So the old band is back together. The Joe Obama administration, as we've been saying, this is the third term effectively of Barack Obama. He's behind the scenes, and all of his people are in place. The same old people. As I went through yesterday, the DOJ, by the way, you might have seen a clip of this this story where they arrested Douglas Mackey. I guess his real name is Ricky Vaughn. But he's charged with conspiring with others in advance of the 2016 U.S. presidential election. To use various social media platforms to disseminate misinformation designed to deprive individuals of their constitutional right to vote. So this is over voter fraud, not in 2020. That didn't happen. That doesn't exist. This one was perfect. The one in November was perfect. But in 2016, voter fraud totally happened. It's definitely newsworthy. And in the case of this guy, Douglas Mackey, he needs to be put in jail. He might go to prison for 10 years. And what did he do? Well, he was making memes on his Twitter feed. He was making jokes, in other words. It says here, with Mackey's arrest, we serve notice. This is the DOJ. Think about where their focus is now. Now that Joe Obama is in the White House. Think about where the focus is for the Department of Justice. It says here, with Mackey's arrest, we serve notice that those who would subvert the democratic process in this manner cannot rely on the cloak of internet anonymity to evade responsibility for their crimes. That's quoting the U.S. attorney that's going after Mackey because he made some memes, some cartoons, some jokes. And of course, right on cue, you have these conservatives that have pointed out other tweets by someone. I saw one this morning. The gal, she had on all the Trump gear, and this is from 4 years ago, and she was saying, hey, make sure that you vote for Trump on Wednesday, November the 9th. That would be the day after the election. Now, that was a long time ago, keep in mind, when we actually voted on the same day. We actually voted on Election Day. But this woman who hated Trump, she sent out this video, this short video saying, make sure you vote. If you're a Trump supporter, vote on Wednesday, November 9th, and that would have been a day late. How many people were deprived of their vote because of that woman's tweet? Just following along the trail that the DOJ is on. They've gone after Mackey because he made some memes. This was Tucker Carlson last night. Talking about this very story, clip seven.
Good morning. Mackey is a 31-year-old conservative journalist from Florida. At 7 a.m., FBI agents showed up at Mackey's house. They threw him in handcuffs and they dragged him to a cell. He now faces 10 years in prison. His crime? He made fun of powerful Democrats on social media. As the federal criminal complaint puts it, quote, Mackey made coordinated use of social media to spread disinformation relevant to the impending 2016 presidential election. This disinformation, the Biden administration solemnly explained, quote, often took the form of memes. Yes, memes. Online mockery. Mockery online is now illegal when it's aimed at the wrong people. Doug Mackey hurt their feelings, so they put him in jail. According to Joe Biden's Justice Department, Doug Mackey violated 18 U.S. Code Section 241. He did this by tricking people, like the dastardly trickster that he is, into not voting in the presidential election. What's interesting is that prosecutors showed no evidence whatsoever that Doug Mackey actually tricked anyone into anything, voting or not. Not a single person.
Not one single person. Zero evidence that it affected anything at all in 2016. And yet they're going after this 31-year-old conservative because he made some, because he mocked the radical left. That's America under the fake president, Joe Biden. And when you think about the DOJ just a couple months ago, nothing to see here, a perfect election. Think about Bill Barr even before the election and how hot and bothered he was when Wolf Blitzer started talking about we've got to have mail-in voting everywhere. And he said to Blitzer, you've heard it before, I played it on this show, he said, you can't open it up to mail-in voting everywhere because it just leads to rampant voter fraud. Is that what you want, Wolf? And then it happens. It happens in plain view. And the DOJ goes silent. Bill Barr goes completely silent. And now here they come, 7 days into, 7 days into the fake presidency, and they've got to go after Mackey for some memes that he made 4 years ago. Voter fraud in 2016, that's a real thing. That's a real thing. And we've still got to punish people for it. Voter fraud in 2020 didn't happen. It was a perfect election. And certainly nobody's going to be punished. At least nobody to this point. There was a story this week about Carter Page. He's the one that they spied on in order to spy on the Trump campaign. This was the deep state. This was the Department of Justice, the FBI, back in 2016. As they were trying to undermine the Trump presidency before it even got started. And in some of the documents that were revealed in those last days that Donald Trump was in the White House, we now know that Stephen Halper, he's the one that the FBI used to try to get Carter Page to admit that he had had this contact with these two suspicious Russians. And we now have the whole transcript of the exchanges. Carter Page, I think he met with Stephen Halper twice, and both times Halper had on a wire. The conversation was being recorded, so the FBI had all of it. And during those conversations, Carter Page had no idea that Halper was wearing a wire, by the way. But even in those conversations, Carter Page said, I don't know these two Russian guys. I've never met with them. And keep in mind, when they went to the FISA court to get the warrant to spy on Trump's people, they were using Carter Page, saying that, look, he's got all of these suspicious contacts. And what we now know from declassified documents is that the documents themselves contain exculpatory evidence that would have shown any court that Carter Page didn't do anything wrong. And so who gets punished? Who gets punished for that illegal setup, that trap, that ambush, that conspiracy? The conspiracy from day one was strong. It's just like the Bible says about Absalom, when he tried to lead a coup attempt against his father. Your Bible says the conspiracy was strong, and we're certainly seeing that today. We're seeing just how strong the conspiracy is. Just the News reported, but perhaps most significant is Page's flat denial that he never met in July 2016 in Russia with two key sanctioned officials. Page's contact with the two men was alleged in both the Steele dossier and the FBI's FISA warrant application. So they lied. The FBI lied. Steele lied in his dossier. They made it up. And remember, they applied for that FISA. They applied for it four times based on the same bogus information each time. They lied. That's the Department of Justice, or should we say injustice. Now they're going after the meme maker. Listen again to what Tucker had to say last night, clip 8.
What you may be wondering does a case like this mean for the First Amendment? Well, it means that it's effectively suspended. You can now be arrested for saying the wrong things. And at 7 a.m. this morning, one journalist actually was arrested for that.
The First Amendment under suspension. You've got to be careful. You've got to be careful about what you say. Because some things definitely need to be censored. And those that say the wrong things, in some cases, they need to go to jail. This is America. 2020, the DHS yesterday released this national terrorism advisory. This terrorism advisory warning Americans. You knew all about the troops, of course, in Washington, D.C., in the lead up to the fake inauguration. There's still 5,000 troops there. Washington, D.C., and now you've got the DHS continuing to send out these messages talking about threats. Not threats abroad, but threats here at home. It says there is currently a heightened threat environment across the United States that is likely to persist over the coming weeks. That's according to this DHS bulletin. They said this before admitting they do not have any information to indicate a specific credible plot. So we're warning you, but we have no evidence. There's no evidence of a specific plot. But you, just so that you know, and of course you know where they're going with this, it's the Trump supporters. They're dangerous. They're dangerous. They were supposed to bring all of this violence to the fake inauguration. Never happened. It never happened. Andrew McCabe, He's from Obama's deep state. He was on TV yesterday saying this is very serious, very serious. This the details of this bulletin, very serious. And the bulletin, what does it say at the end? We don't have any information to indicate specific or credible plots. Nothing. Nothing. But let's keep, just like with COVID-19, let's go ahead and try to scare America anyway. Let's go ahead and try to spread misinformation. This kind of misinformation, that's fine, totally fine. Here's a Democratic Senator, Chris Murphy, on the news yesterday talking about the threats that are still out there. Clip 2.
The threat to the country is not over, right? We still have 5,000 National Guard members surrounding the Capitol complex. Why? Because there are still existing threats, present threats to the security of the Capitol. And so long as Donald Trump is empowered by Senate Republicans, there is still the chance that he is going to incite another attempt at the Capitol or stir up similar trouble at the state legislative level or in a governor's election when things don't go his way. The threat is still very real to American democracy.
That's a senator talking about the threat that Donald Trump's supporters are bringing to America. What was it that Tulsi Gabbard said yesterday? Let me just play this again for you, because, again, she's a Democrat who ran for president. And here she is. She made this video a couple days ago. Here she is talking about the very real threats coming from her own party. This is clip 3.
But let's be clear. The John Brennans, Adam Schiffs, and the oligarchs in big tech who are trying to undermine our constitutionally protected rights and turn our country into a police state with KGB-style surveillance are also domestic enemies and much more powerful and therefore dangerous than the mob that stormed the Capitol.
much more dangerous, KGB style, she said, tactics, just like with arresting this meme maker. He could go to jail for 10 years. And then all these dictatorial actions, if we're to take Joe Biden's word for it from October. Sam just emailed me a piece. This is from the editorial board at the New York Times. Headline, ease up on the executive actions, Joe. The New York Times even is saying, hey, maybe you should work your way through Congress like every other president generally does. Even the New York Times is shocked. 40 executive actions. That goes on even as the media continues screaming about how dangerous Donald Trump is. Donald Trump and his supporters. Listen to Jake Tapper. He's at CNN. This is a montage put together by Grabian. Tapper going on and on and on about the terrorists right here inside of America. Clip one.
So how did these domestic terrorists storm the nation's capital? The capital ransacked by MAGA terrorists. The assault perpetrated by the MAGA terrorists.
The terrorists.
The MAGA terrorists.
MAGA terrorists.
A deadly attack by MAGA terrorists.
The MAGA terrorist mob.
A terrorist attack on the U.S. Capitol.
Far-right domestic terrorism, a huge problem in this country. Nobody supports terrorist attacks, or I used to think that anyway, but nobody rational supports terrorist attacks.
Should there be repercussions for your colleagues who played a role in inciting this terrorist attack?
You can't have presidents of the United States inciting terrorist attacks on the Capitol.
Incited a terrorist mob.
Incited the terrorist attack.
And the terrorists that he has emboldened.
But after the terrorist attack on the Capitol,
that deadly terrorist attack,
the deadly riot, the terrorist attack,
the deadly terrorist attack,
that's not even including the terrorist attack.
New clues that the January 6th Capitol attack may just be the beginning of more right-wing extremist MAGA terrorist attacks in America.
You see, this is only the beginning. It's gonna happen every day now. You've got to be, and the senators are on board with it, the Democrat senators. Look, it's still dangerous out there. You still got to be careful. All of these domestic terrorists, these MAGA terrorists, as Jake Tapper says there, Tom Elliott, he's the one who puts together those Grabian montages. But he tweeted out that the essence of propaganda is repetition. Just say it over and over and over again. Just like Hitler's propaganda chief said, just tell a big lie and tell it often. Say it all the time and people will eventually believe it. That's what we're seeing. A big lie, and they keep repeating it. They keep on repeating it. One more news item. Unrelated to this propaganda, but I think something that is pretty revealing. There was this story, Richard called it the stupidest stock market story he's ever seen. And it has to do with this company called GameStop. They actually produce physical video games, like old style video games that I would have played back when I was a teenager. So it's a thing of the past, basically. And, of course, most video games are just downloaded today. And, well, I don't even know much about how the technology works today for video games. Only that this particular company appeared to be doomed because, again, they weren't keeping up with the developments in technology. So these big hedge funds, as Richard explained in his notes today, They shorted the stock, which essentially means that they bet against the company or they bet that the company would fail. And these hedge funds were making quite a lot of money because the company was going nowhere. So there were a bunch of people online, I think it was through Reddit, and they decided it would be funny to start buying up these shares, these stocks that really were worth nothing. And so the stock price, I'm not sure if this all happened this week or just it was recent, but the share price for this company went from $4 to $380 just because of ordinary Americans that, again, thought it would be funny to go against these behemoths, these hedge funds that were actually betting against this company. And, well, when this stock share went through the roof, you had hedge funds out there that lost billions of dollars. There's one, Melvin Capital, that's now seeking a bailout. It says in the New York Post, just to make one serious point on this story, in the 1630s, it was Tulips. In the 1990s, it was Netscape and Pets.com. Later, as we all know, it was housing. Today, the warning sign flashing danger, signaling that the stock market has lost its mind, is GameStop. And the point that the New York Post makes here is that, you know, GameStop is not alone. There are plenty of stocks that are way overvalued, that are inflated based purely on hype, not on the success of the company. And you may have seen clips of this other individual that predicted the 2008 crash, saying that we're headed for that same thing in the next few months. There's a lot of funny money flowing through the stock market. It's a massive bubble. When will it burst? Bubbles always do. It may be a pretty good sign, as the New York Post brings out, that we're heading for another, you know, dot-com burst like we saw in the 90s, or a crash similar to what happened in 2008. When we come back, we'll carry on with our study and focus primarily on, well, we've got a few personalities that we'll focus on, but we'll spend most of our time with Absalom and the conspiracy that he led against his father, King David. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. The Armstrong College Bible Correspondence Course is a distance learning program that makes the Bible clear and understandable. The correspondence course enables enrollees to learn what the Bible itself says about subjects that affect you and the world you live in. This fascinating Bible course highlights and proves what the Bible says about morality, war, religion, terrorism, and other current events, focusing on the root causes of this world's many problems facing man, as well as their solutions. The Bible and this course also focuses on the reason mankind was created in the first place, the way to happiness, accomplishment, and fulfillment, as well as the truth behind important doctrinal questions, such as what happens after we die, the nature of God, the resurrection, the millennium, and other critical subjects. Enroll today in the Herbert W. Armstrong Bible Correspondence Course. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com. This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
I was telling the students yesterday about just some, a lot of times we've kind of pointed back to history that we've lived through in our church and what happened following the death of Herbert Armstrong back in 1986. And I was going through some of that history yesterday with the students. We just passed the 35-year anniversary of Herbert Armstrong's death. And in those final days, Herbert Armstrong actually appointed Joseph Tkach Sr. to succeed him or to follow him as pastor general of the Worldwide Church of God. And as I was telling the students, at the time that that happened, well, knowing what we now know about the Tkach administration, Mr. Tkach and his son, Joe Tkach Jr., you could have looked at that history or when you were living through it and thought, what a disaster. How did this man get in charge of the church? The Tkaches went on to destroy everything that Herbert Armstrong stood for. Now, as we know, based upon James 5 and so on. Mr. Armstrong, right before he died, he realized that he had made a mistake. He realized that it was a conspiracy to try to undermine the work of God and all, as I say, all that Herbert Armstrong stood for. And yet, as you fast forward 35 years, you see the history in its entirety, and you think, okay, God knew what he was doing. It was a test for the church. God did send strong delusion, as it says in 2 Thessalonians 2. But when you look at God's work today, it continues. It's thriving, in fact. It's a remnant, a small group of people. It's not like it was in the mid-1980s with tens of thousands of people in God's church supporting God's apostle. But it certainly is God's work, and it takes God's message right around the world. That's what you see at the trumpet.com website or here on this radio program or the Key of David. But that's just one example that we live through of an imposter getting right to the very top of, in this case, God's church. And God allowed it to happen. On Monday's program, I mentioned the example of Saul's son, Ishbosheth, and how that after Saul was slain in battle, it was one of Saul's commanders, Abner, that said, "Hey, you know, we've still got one of Saul's son. Let's come together and we'll make Ishbosheth the king." And the Bible says that Ishbosheth ruled for 2 years, and all of Israel looked to him, except for the one tribe of Judah. So God had anointed David, of course, 17 years before Saul's death. God's purpose was for David to be installed as king. But even after Saul died, there was some controversy there. There was a king that God had chosen, and then there was a fake king that was self-appointed, just like Takach Sr., made himself an apostle within months of Mr. Armstrong's death. He was a self-appointed apostle. That does happen. When you look at what Paul wrote about in 2 Corinthians 11, he warned of a false Jesus. He warned of false apostles like Simon Magus. He warned of false ministers. And then it says about Satan himself, that he comes as an angel of light. Even when David was well into his reign, and there was no question about his position of authority, he was the king. Ishbosheth was no longer on the scene, and all of Israel was looking to King David. And yet you can read right in the middle of 2 Samuel, well, starting in 2 Samuel 15, it tells the story of Absalom's rebellion. And how many years he had this conspiracy in motion, and how and when he pulled it off, and by the time he pulled it off, he was riding this fancy chariot through the streets of Jerusalem. There was a train of men out in front, a big procession. He fancied himself as this great judge or ruler or king over Israel. As you can see in this chapter, 2 Samuel 15 and verse 4, it says, "Absalom said, moreover, oh, that I were made judge in the land, that every man which has any suit or cause might come unto me, and I would do him justice." He was just so impressed with himself. He loved himself. Absalom did. He thought he should have final say. He thought he knew more than his father. He thought he knew more than the people. Verse 5, it says, "And it was so that when any man came near to him to do him obeisance, he put forth his hand and took him and kissed him. And on this manner did Absalom to all Israel that came to the king for judgment." So Absalom, it says, this is the end of verse 6, he stole the hearts of the men of Israel. He stole their hearts. This was like an election steal almost. He stole it away. That's Satan can do that. He can use corrupt leadership to steal away the hearts of men. He can use imposters to deceive tens of thousands of people. As I say, the Takachas did it. And here was Absalom day after day. He was a charismatic fellow. He was working the crowds. He was at the city gates. He was talking to those that wanted to come and see King David because he wanted them to see just how impressive he was. He worked tirelessly to persuade Israel, the people of Israel, to reject their king. He worked to undermine King David's authority, King David's God-given authority. It happened, spelled out in several chapters of the Bible. God allowed it. God allowed it to happen. Well, this conspiracy was well orchestrated, and it ended in his coronation in Hebron. This was the military stronghold in Judah. Verse 7 says, now it came, just to back up a little bit, it says, now it came about at the end of 4 years, this is from the New American Standard, that Absalom said to the king, please let me go and pay my vow, which I have made to the Eternal in Hebron. So he was still faking it. He was still pretending with his father David that he was, you know, really interested in worshiping God. This is a religious man. This was a faithful man. So it seemed. He went to his father, and it says 4 years. Now, commentaries will talk about this conspiracy being in motion for 4 years. I think it says 40 in the King James, but that's an inaccurate translation. But this went on for years. That's the point. It went on for a long time. Verse 8, it says, for your servant vowed a vow while I abode at Geshur in Syria, saying, if the Lord shall bring me again indeed to Jerusalem, then I will serve the Eternal. And the king said to him, go in peace. So he arose and he went to Hebron. So here is Absalom feigning his desire to just serve and worship God faithfully. As I say, pretending to his father that he was some kind of angel of light. I'm just here to defend your administration. Verse 10, it says, but Absalom sent spies throughout all the tribes of Israel, saying, as soon as you hear the sound of the trumpet, then you shall say, Absalom reigns in Hebron. So this was all a carefully orchestrated plot to overthrow King David. It was carefully orchestrated, this attempted coup, a military coup against the king of Israel. And once he declared himself to be king in Hebron, David, as you can see from this account, it put King David on the run. He even had to flee Jerusalem. Verse 11, it says, and with Absalom went 200 men out of Jerusalem that were called, and they went in their simplicity, and they knew not anything, so they didn't yet know about the conspiracy. They went in their simplicity. I don't know if that means that they should have known better, if that's what God is indicating, but they probably should have. They didn't see through. They didn't see through Absalom's act. It was an act. It was fake. And these top men didn't see it. Absalom calls for Ahithophel. He was David's right-hand man, one of them. One of David's chief counselors. And Ahithophel ends up helping Absalom with this revolt, with this conspiracy. Listen to verse 12. It says, and Absalom sent for Ahithophel, the Gilonite, David's counselor, from his city, even from Gilo, while he offered sacrifices. And it says, and the conspiracy was strong, for the people increased continually with Absalom. Everyone was just joining on with this conspiracy. The conspiracy was strong, it says. There was a lot of disloyalty. This exposed a lot of corruption. This exposed a lot of traitors, a lot of individuals like Ahithophel that used to really give strong support to King David. David was in a pretty weak position by this point, as I say, and he decided to flee from Jerusalem along with his servants and I think about 600 men or so, the ones that were loyal to him. But he was outnumbered because the conspiracy was so strong. Verse 13, and there came a messenger to David, saying, the hearts of the men of Israel are after Absalom. And David said unto all his servants that were with him at Jerusalem, arise and let us flee, for we shall not else escape from Absalom. Make speed to depart, lest he overtake us suddenly and bring evil upon us and smite the city with the edge of the sword. So David flees from Jerusalem. It didn't look good for him at this time. As I told the students yesterday, imagine if you were living in Jerusalem at this time and you see King David take off with 600 servants. And you know about Absalom in Hebron, the military stronghold of Judah. You know he's got command of the military now. This was looking pretty bad. This looked really bad for David. David was God's anointed. David was chosen by God. And yet here is this conspiracy. This conspiracy against his administration. Verse 15, it says, and the king's servants said unto the king, behold, your servants are ready to do whatsoever my lord the king shall appoint. So you do see examples like with Zadok and others that were very loyal. See, loyalties are always tested during a great revolt or during a strong conspiracy. You see where people stand. You see where their true loyalties lie. That's what we see here in 2 Samuel 15. And that's what we've seen in the United States of America in the last few months. We're getting a good idea of where everyone stands. Verse 19, it says, then said the king to Ittai the Gittite, wherefore go you also with us? Or why are you? This was a Gentile. And David says to him, you know, why are you going with us? Why are you fleeing with us? You're not even an Israelite. Why don't you go and just, you know, be with your family? Thank you for your service, but go ahead and join your family. And Ittai, verse 21, Ittai answered the king and said, as the Lord lives, and as my lord the king lives, surely in what place my lord the king shall be, whether in death or life, even there also will your servant be. He had unflinching loyalty to King David. He was going to stay with the king wherever the king went. And so David, once again, as he was before Saul died, once again, David was on the run, not from an evil king, but from an evil son. He fled Jerusalem. He headed into the wilderness, perhaps spent some time in Petra, and he was with Zadok and Abiathar and others that were loyal through this insurrection. David then sent the ark back to Jerusalem. He knew it needed to be there. That was God's headquarters city. But listen to this in verse 23. I can't cover all the details. It says, and all the country wept with a loud voice, and all the people passed over. The king also himself passed over the brook Kidron, and all the people passed over toward the way of the wilderness. They headed into the wilderness, and the country, the nation, wept with a loud voice. The Israelites of old thought to themselves, "What is happening to our nation? Everything was going, it was going great. But what happened? How did this conspiracy happen so seemingly quick? How did it happen so fast?" Well, it was in the works for a number of years, as we read. And Absalom, he picked the right moment to seize power. And the nation was shocked. The nation mourned the departure of King David. The king of Israel was gone. The insurrection, it was a success. Absalom completed the steal. Verse 24, it says, "And lo, Zadok also and all the Levites were with him, bearing the Ark of the Covenant of God. And they set down the Ark of God, and Abiathar went up until all the people had done passing out of the city." Zadok, as you can see in the following chapters, he takes on a more central role because of his loyalty, because he stayed with David all the way through to the end. Verse 25, "And the king said unto Zadok, Carry back the Ark of God into the city. If I shall find favor in the eyes of the Eternal, he will bring me again and show me both it and his habitation. But if he thus say, I have no delight in you, behold, here am I. Let him do to me as seems good unto him." By this point, you see David's out in the wilderness. He's with his 600 men. And all of these events had really humbled him. And he knew he was in God's hands. He knew God had to sort this out. He knew God had to take care of it. He knew that there was no other way except for God to intervene and to fix this national tragedy. He understood that God had obviously chosen Jerusalem. So he sent the ark back and he told his advisors, "Look, we're just going to put this in God's hands. We're just going to let God take care of this." Well, David also took some action. He asked these two priests to go back to Jerusalem. You can see that in verses 27 and 28 to effectively spy for him. It says in verse 30, "And David went up by the ascent of Mount Olivet and wept as he went up and had his head covered, and he went barefoot. And all the people that was with him covered every man his head, and they went up weeping as they went up." Just a pretty pitiful scene. Weeping and wailing, challenging times. The affliction was bitter. It was so bitter. And they were appealing to God for his miraculous intervention. And through all this, David finds out that Ahithophel, his chief advisor, one of them, he had joined with Absalom's coup, and David was crushed. David was devastated. David couldn't believe it. Verse 31, "And one told David, saying, Ahithophel is among the conspirators with Absalom. And David said, O Lord, I pray you, turn the counsel of Ahithophel into foolishness." He went to God and he said, "God, you take care of this. You punish that servant. You take care of this problem. You overturn this." Well, there's other players that are mentioned. Hushai is mentioned in the next few verses. He's given a difficult mission. He's supposed to go over to Absalom and feign allegiance to the fake king. As I say, I can't read all the details, but you look at the next chapter, you read about the very dark days in Israel. Absalom gets this counsel from Ahithophel. It says in verse 20, "Give counsel among you what we shall do." This is 2 Samuel 16, now verse 21. "And Ahithophel said unto Absalom, Go into your father's concubines, which he has left to keep the house, and all Israel shall hear that you are abhorred of your father, and then shall the hands of all that are with you be strong. Verse 22, so they spread Absalom a tent upon the top of the house, and Absalom went in unto his father's concubines in the sight of all Israel. Everyone witnessed this. They were all watching this. Verse 23, and the counsel of Ahithophel, which he counseled in those days, was as if a man had inquired at the oracle of God. So was all the counsel of Ahithophel, both with David and Absalom. I mean, they looked to him like a great man of God, and now he's given this counsel to Absalom. Just go in with all these women in an open-air tent. Let the entire nation see it. These were dark days in Israel. This was a bitter affliction. And God allowed this coup, this insurrection. He allowed it to go on for some time, and it exposed, in the end, it exposed the traitors. What did the Bible say about Ahithophel? Well, the whole nation. It was as if he was giving oracles of God. You read in 2 Samuel 17 that man committed suicide. It never does end well for traitors, for insurrectionists. As I was telling the students yesterday, what God wants from us in His church, most of all, is loyalty. We want to stay with Christ all the way through to the end. We want to fight with Christ, spiritually speaking. We want to seek the kingdom of God first, above all else. Walk by faith. Put our trust in God. Total trust. Tomorrow, if I have time, or maybe next week, I'll get into other examples. You look at the example of Adonijah. Again, I touched on some of this on Monday's show. But you look at the example of Adonijah. Here again, he appointed himself as king. And it didn't work out very well. I don't have time to get into chapters 18 and 19, but you see how God overturned this, the thing with Absalom, I mean. God is able to allow an insurrection or an attempted coup. He's able to allow it to go on for years, and of course, he can overturn it. He can flip it when he needs to as well. This has been Israel's history. We read about this in the Old Testament. And Israel today, if you've read the United States and Britain in prophecy, you know this. But Israel today, Manasseh, Ephraim, the United States, Britain, well, you see some of these same kinds of crises. You see some of these same national tragedies. You see a well-orchestrated coup attempt. You see God allowing certain things. And then you see God intervening. And in the case of that Jeroboam prophecy, intervening to save America, to save Manasseh temporarily. It's awesome, this history. It really does help for us to, I think, keep things in proper context. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to submit some feedback, you can email us at td@kpcg.fm. We thank you for joining us on today's show, and we'll see you tomorrow.